the problem creates opportunities, right? When you have a fixed means, you have a problem already, right? So you're fixing a problem that's already existing in that company. Usually those companies, they have a lot of shortage in a lot of areas they're not looking after. So the fix is not necessarily in disrupting their current workforce or letting people go, as much as more, let's look at it holistically and let's make things more streamlined.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I have invited Fadi El Mualen from Valenta to come and talk to us about purchasing and procurement through the prism of businesses that are hoping to be sold, maybe looking for acquisition targets and what to do after acquisition, specifically when it comes to how procurement and Fadi and his team are able to help at each stage of those different of the life cycle. So Fadi, thank you very much for coming today. Maybe you could just take a minute or two to introduce yourself for those who don't know you yet and tell us a bit about yourself personally and the company Valenta and your position there.
Thanks, James, for having me. It's great to be here. A little bit about myself. I come from a procurement career. I'm a practitioner and I've been in procurement for more than 20 years. And recently I joined Valenta as a consultant and managing partner. I built that function of procurement within Valenta. Valenta is a technology and business consulting firm, but also it's a platform where I can operate my business on. They provide me all the support and the back end. I've been with them for the past 6-7 months, and it's been great, you know, leveraging my expertise and what I like to do and how to influence and impact organizations.
And when you say it's a platform, is that a technology platform or a BPO platform?
It is a BPO platform. Definitely technology is a big component of that. We're heavily influenced by technology and we actually enable companies with technology. So technology is a big component of that. But it's a business platform, basically.
So today, I thought it would be interesting to think about procurement through a prism, which isn't always thought about, which is when it comes to the life cycle of a company, the different stages, either pre-acquisition, searching for acquisition targets, and then post-acquisition, and how the procurement function has a part to play within that. And I know you have a lot of experience with customers in each stage of that life cycle. So maybe we could just start off with figuring out like who has to really worry about this in the first place, which your experience with Fortune 500 companies and startups and mid-sized companies. How should you figure out whether procurement is something you should think about professionalizing, whether it's either you're too small or is there a Goldilocks zone where it's just too right? Or are there opportunities where it's a company is just too big and you couldn't help them anymore?
Yeah, that's a great question. And still a great question in industry because the procurement career itself is transforming. And when I take it a little bit one step up, it's more around spend management overall. And being that trusted advisor for the CFO and C-level CEOs, that they're trying to look at the expense components and rationalize it or reduce it so they can optimize their margin or transform the company itself. And we're in a great position to help in that area, because we understand how things work. We combine the financial aspect with the operational aspect, with the legal aspect, and we have that holistic view of the ecosystem. And we understand the business impact if we move that component or reduce it, and what are the alternatives and strategies that we can employ in order to help with that journey. Whether it's a PE firm or small to mid-sized companies trying to grow and scale, or larger enterprises trying to optimize their operations and improve their margin, we are definitely can help in those areas.
Companies that are pre-acquisition, but maybe know that is in their roadmap, what are the most important things for them to get their ducks in a row on before they're even suitable or attractive to acquirers? from a procurement perspective?
That's another component. Having a seat at the table is very important, and bringing a procurement or spend management expert to the table also is invaluable. A lot of times, and I talk to a lot of CFOs, they have to look at a lot of things when they're acquiring a company. And when you have a team or a person, subject matter experts, that's really focused on the spend component and understanding the area, whether it's from a supplier risk perspective or from a big commitment perspective, we're really bringing to the surface all the risk and liability associated with the to be acquired company, the target company. Because remember, when we acquire or anyone acquire a company, whether it's a big company acquire a smaller one or a PE firm acquiring a company, they're not just acquiring the assets, they're also taking the liability on. Having a good understanding of those liabilities is going to be invaluable in the way it's priced and the way it's going to be handled post-acquisition.
Yeah, are acquirers looking for more flexibility or certainty in sort of cash flow outcomes?
I would say visibility the most, visibility and understanding the most. So it can be part of the puzzle, right? I've seen so many times companies, because remember, smaller companies usually that they're targeted for acquisition, they don't have all the workforce and expertise to manage every single aspect of the business well, especially on the procurement side. So there might be a lot of bad deals that they entered, not optimized pricing. Sometimes they lock them into long-term deals with a hefty penalty to exit. And that needs to be identified. Like, what are the big commitments that those companies have made in their supplier ecosystem that the PE firm needs to be aware of? And what can we do about it? Can we mitigate that? And some of those deals, they're actually multi-year, multi-million dollars, and they can be overlooked. It needs to be brought to the surface. In addition to that, what's the risk associated with their supplier base or their processes or their systems, but mostly the supplier base? Because a lot of small firms, they're also reliant on a few handful of suppliers and partners. And kind of understanding that relationship and dependency is very critical. Because if you think about it, when you acquire a company, you don't merge the company or dilute, dissolve that company. You want it to operate and you want it to be still profitable until you figure out what's your strategy and approach, whether you're going to build that as part of your product suite or you're going to keep running it on its own and its own branding and name. It depends on that strategy. So you want to make sure that it's still healthy and or can operate in a healthy fashion in the future.
So I guess we've all heard of concentration risk when it comes to customers, but you may not be considering it on the other side, on your vendor side, like who are you locked in with, or maybe even technically, you know, technology stacks which you're bought into, you can't get out of, or service contracts, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and these are all going to come up, no doubt, in the next phase, which will be in the actual negotiation evaluation. This is where you really get under the hood and you sort of reap the rewards or otherwise of your preparation. So I know that you work with PE firms quite a bit as well. What stage are you brought in at? Is it at the deal selection stage? So while they're still evaluating deals, looking at their pipeline, or is it much later than that?
It depends. Usually we're brought in when there's a problem, or a big question mark. Right. So I would split into two categories. There are the PE firms that they are usually focused on fixing and flipping that company for a profit. And literally it's fix and flip, like you do house flipping. And this is a good thing, in my opinion, because I call it repositioning. You're repositioning that company in a way that's going to grow and scale and be profitable or go IPO from private. And that's the fun part where you really trying to transform that company, you know, from a different aspect, you have bigger impact. So this is really early on, either you're pre-target or, okay, we ended up with this company, we have those problems, can you help us fix them? And then we can step in and help look at overall their spend spectrum and also the culture of the company, how they operate, how they've been operating, what are the pockets of opportunities, the big opportunities that we can influence and impact in order to make a difference. The other types of firms that they come to us, mostly they're investors type PE firm. They kind of want to bring that company in, they want to hold it, they want to invest in it and grow it, either to create a portfolio of products or merge it into a bigger product that they have in their portfolio. And this is a more a long-term play. We have less of those, but those are also very strategic in their thinking and the way they operate. Those types of PE firm tend to favor a center of excellence kind of model, where they can leverage that muscle across multiple companies or across their portfolio.
So those bigger companies that are doing, say, a strategic play for a longer term integration, I'm guessing will generally have a procurement function or will have thought about some of the strategy. Are you able to take their playbook and then sort of get under the hood of the new target and implement that? Or how do you work with our existing procurement teams? Do you need to?
Very, very important question, because I think one of the biggest overlooked area is the morale of the employees that are in those companies, and not necessarily just procurement, all the functions. When you've been acquired, employees tend to kind of be concerned about their job, and because the normal thing is a lot of companies that try to reduce the headcount for the target company. And one thing is really to ensure there is some sort of stability in their operations when it comes to procurement, because we want continuity. We want things to stay beyond. We want the engagement with the supplier to run the business, whether on the marketing or the IT side or the platform product, etc. What we focus on is really one, change management and communication is very important, and having a long-term plan, short-term and long-term plan for those employees, giving them some sort of assurance and options as to what path can they follow in order to secure either a next level job that fits their career aspiration or switch them to our side if we need like boots on the ground and those markets. There's a couple of options there, but the people component is going to be very, very critical.
Okay, that's very critical. So what I heard there was in the acquisition target, you know, your team is able to go in, understand how to keep the lights on, let's say, provide some optionality when it comes to operations in the first stage. And then when it comes to the integration stage, you already know how the business is running. You're able to manage that process over to the new team. Whatever happens, whatever is decided upon on the acquisition team side, is that broadly a kind of a two-stage approach there?
Correct. The one word, kind of big word here is leverage, right? Ultimately, you want to leverage your relationship across the ecosystem. If you have a bigger relationship with a cloud provider, you want to leverage your master agreement terms with that provider for the smaller company because you get more benefits, more bang for the buck, right? So leverage is going to be across at the sourcing and supply relationship side and at the operational side. If you have a big team that's running AP and cutting POs, you probably don't need that team because you have automation. You have a kind of a platform that does that for you, or you have a COE kind of center of excellence, consolidation of all these functions as well.
Well, you said the magic word, POs. So, I mean, I have to chime in here. I mean, do you see an opportunity I see in a lot of our clients is they're doing it the old way. They don't realize what a terrible inefficiency it is using maybe an unsuited platform like an ERP that isn't suited for the procurement process, maybe none at all. Maybe they're still on QuickBooks or something. And, you know, people think of, well, if you put a tool in, you're going to get rid of people. But actually, those people are basically barely able to swim where they are doing things the old way by paper, maybe, or emails or God knows what. So then bringing best of class solutions in allows that team to operate far more efficiently together. I'd be interested to hear, maybe you could share if you can, like, have you seen any examples of really where a team was bogged down with their old process and you were able to turn things around for them? Yeah. Sometimes I like to think that we send thousands of people home 10 minutes early at Procurement Express. Like, have you seen an on-the-ground example of how people's lives have been changed by improving these processes for them?
The key here is really having an open mindset, right? An acceptance of change that, you know, and I call it kind of acknowledgement that we have a problem. And when you step in and start kind of work with them, people will be very eager to open up their book of business, if you want, to share what's their root cause problems and what's consuming most of their time. And if you come from a perspective of helping them, I think they will be more collaborative. And that's what we focus on. There are so many examples of companies where, you know, I'm working with a client out of Florida that they are merging basically a business and, you know, they're starting from scratch. So they have to stand up their own procurement organization, but it's kind of a lot of band-aids over the years. And just looking at the processes that they have to go through and giving them that line of sight of how things should operate. The nice thing about my approach, what I like, is I don't come from a perspective of rip and replace. Let's see what you have. Let's see how fixable it is so we can have minimal disruption in the short term. Yeah. And then work our way through to a more strategic transformation plan over the next 3 to 5 years. Because I think gradual changes are better accepted and adopted, and people don't kind of jump on another ship right away. It takes time for them to get familiar with the new processes and new systems or technology that they have to deal with. And there is a little bit of upskilling that people need to do as they navigate their career and what's their next level. And now that AI is taking over a lot of the kind of task, it's intelligently, not just robotically. It's forcing people to kind of think outside the box as to how I can still add value around all this automation happening.
Is there ever a tension there? I mean, talking about the sort of fix and flip approach, when you know you have this 3 to 5 year time frame, let's say, you don't have quite as long to take that time. How do you resolve those two issues where maybe there's a firm plan to be worked to, you need to make progress, yet making too much change too quickly can burn the boats, I guess, or mess things up. Is that a problem, or are you able to balance those two? And
I think it's the problem creates the opportunities, right? It's when you have a fix means you have a problem already. Right. So you're fixing a problem that's already existing in that company. And usually those companies, they have a lot of shortage in a lot of areas they're not kind of looking after. So the fix is not necessarily in disrupting their current workforce or letting people go, as much as more, let's look at it holistically. Let's identify those areas of gaps. And let's make things more streamlined. And there might be some repositioning, and that's okay. But they might be very short on resources as well, which gives us even more leverage to rely on existing resources to upskill them, put them in the right places within the organization because we need them, but also supplement their bandwidth with some sort of either technology or some staff aug, whether managed service provider model or an extension of the team.
I mean, it must be quite fun to come in and see this great business, which has grown fast, which has created something, but are obviously doing things non-optimally, and then to be able to make those optimizations to push on profitability pretty quickly, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. It creates an amazing relationship between us and the companies because you're really affecting the way they do business in their lives in a lot of ways, right? So I think there has to be a lot of trust, a lot of accountability on our side as well to make sure we're doing everything we could. And typically what I commit to is like I'm invested in that process. I'm literally invested in that process and committing to the success and to the outcome.
So we've talked about how you can help a company pre-acquisition, PE firms, and what they're looking for. Sounds like you're brought in there to fix a problem generally when you get into post-acquisition, and then using technology and maybe a BPO platform to push on profitability, whether it's a strategic or a fix and flip model, as you described it. I hadn't heard that before. I like it. So is there an ideal sort of type of PE firm you like to work with? Is there a particular sector or vertical that you have particular expertise in?
I wouldn't say a type of firms, but more so usually you have an easier group of people that you like to work with versus more difficult, more demanding in a lot of ways, and they're unreasonable to a certain extent. And you try to be selective once you know who you're dealing with. But overall, we should be able to handle any task that comes our way. And I think every opportunity is a good challenge for us and for me personally. And I'd like to genuinely learn about the business, learn about the people, and try to make an impact there.
Culture fit. I think that comes back to culture fit. you say like a client that you, you know, you can work well with, I mean, that's got to be about culture, right? So when I interact with, say, PE firms or whatever, I'm always wondering, well, in the back of my mind, I have this Wolf of Wall Street type mentality I'm afraid of, you know, I'm thinking like, but then actually some of those firms, you know, you really have to look at their values and see how their values line up with yours. So what would you say are the values that Valenta exemplify?
I would say one is trust. We always give our clients and partners the upper hand from a contractual perspective. We have short termination clause. If they're not happy, they can terminate it within 30 days. There's no penalties and all kinds of things. We don't overcommit our clients. We want to make sure that our success is driving the business. And that's very important. The other piece that I did on my side is we're invested in that business in a way that I don't want to be paid unless there is a success. And I'm committing myself to that success of the firm. It's not about just selling staff hours. It's about really business value that's going to drive success for that company. And that's very important because I was on the buy side and I'm still, but from a corporate perspective. And I know how it feels when consultants, they just try to drive kind of work hours and charge you billable hours for that. You know, I feel that model is not very successful in building great relationships as much as really driving the value of the business. The other component of values that Valenta has is really there's a global aspect of that company, but also there's a local managing partner relationship. So we're a global company with a local business intimacy. So we have managing partners all over the world. And if you're, let's say, in Ireland, like yourself, we have someone in that market that's closer to you that can connect with you in your time zone, that can, you know, lead that relationship. Whether or not they're the subject matter expert, they can connect you with the subject matter experts in that ecosystem to drive the functional element of your need or services. But you'll have someone in your proximity that you can talk to that will be in charge of your account. We don't have a sales structure. We're only a managing partner layer. So a person that's really a business entrepreneur that's invested in that business, and they care about the clients because you are their clients. They're not chasing quota. It's more, and that's very unique in the industry versus like a sales army or, you know, that they're kind of trying to call you all day long in order to get their quota at the end of the quarter. That's not how we operate. That's not our model.
Sure. And all the time, you know, you're conscious you're paying for that excellent sales team that's following up with you. It has to be fed. So
Exactly.
You are based in the Bay Area. Is that correct? So a lot of tech, I'm guessing, in that area.
A lot of startups, a lot of technology firms, but also the Bay Area is big. And, you know, a lot of times I cover clients outside the Bay Area, California, or even across the country. And we have clients in Canada as well.
Awesome. I love what you said about giving the client the upper hand. I think that's a very nice attitude to have. We were talking about our love of travel. I definitely have a big love of travel. Where would you say is your favorite place that you've worked from, and maybe one place that you've holidayed from, and why would you recommend them?
I'm not going to blame you and say Ireland, Dublin. I've been to Dublin. It's a lovely city. There is a bar, a pub at every corner, which is great. I loved it. I love traveling to Asia. I think Asia is an amazing kind of balance of culture and landscape and nature. So my last trip was to the Philippines, amazing country. I think 800 islands or plus, and you can't get enough time to visit all the aspects that this country has. And I know there's so many countries in Southeast Asia and Asia in general. So I have on my bucket list a few countries to visit. You know, Indonesia is one of them. Maybe in Europe, my next trip might be Spain or, you know, Italy. On my bucket list on the next couple of years, hopefully.
If you're listening this far, since Fadi has mentioned Dublin. I didn't pay him to say that. But my top tip, if you're coming to Dublin, go to Mulligan's Pub on Poolbeg Street. They have, it's an authentic bar, not a tourist bar, and you'll get a great pint of Guinness, which is, that's the great thing about being Irish. If I was English, you'd expect me to be well-spoken. If I was German, you'd expect me to be smart. But if Irish, you just have a beer with someone and they feel like they've had the authentic experience. So that's my recommendation.
Love it.
All right, Paddy. Thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us. I really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to building a relationship in the future.